Dave back with you on 720 WGN. So Rick Dale of Rick's Restoration has been restoring American history since he was just 9 years old. And for the past six seasons, hosted one of cable's top-rated programs, American Restoration, on the History Channel. And joining us tonight to talk about life in the restoration business, the research he does, and the care he takes to restore a piece to its original glory is Rick Dale. Rick, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Dave. How's it going?
Excellent, man. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Here's what the beginning was. You were about 9 years old, I believe, and you've told the story before, but your dad taught you how to take old things and make them new. Were you about 9 years old? What was your first project? How did that all work out?
Yeah, when I was nine years old, I wanted a bicycle. All the friends we lived on a big circle and where you could ride bikes and everything. All my friends ended up getting brand new bikes, and I asked my dad for a bike. We didn't have a lot of money. So one day, my dad brought home this old Schwinn bicycle, and it was something that he literally found in the dumpster or scrapyard. And he told me, he said, if you want to appreciate something, you need to build it yourself. So what he did was he helped me, you know, took me down to the store and bought my paint and my parts for my bike, and I'd come back and he'd help me work on it. He'd leave me alone and let me try to get things done myself. And when I got done, I will never forget the first day that I rode it. As I was driving around the neighborhood with all my friends and their new bikes, I was the proudest kid out there. And, you know, he taught me a very valuable lesson from that day and that day on.
Well, there's something to be said for not only doing it yourself, but having your father teach you that's the way to get it done. Not, you know, let's not go out and spend $8 billion and go find a new bike. I'm not going to do it for you. You know, it's a little bit of a trial by error thing, but it really taught you something in life.
Did, and he was full of lessons, believe me. And I was sort of wild about my dad I grew really fast, and I raced cars and built all kinds of stuff, and I never really gave him the credit he deserved. And now when he watches the show, I mean, he's like 82 or 83 years old.
That's
right,
great.
Now
God bless him.
He comes up and hugs me and says how proud he is. So that means a lot.
How cool is that? And
that's
just
cool.
So that started at nine, but then, you know, as you got into the teenage years, your passion continued, and you started, you know, you started with a bike. You started working then on motorcycles, cars, boats, and other mechanical things.
Yeah, I mean, I think the next thing that I did was a soapbox derby. So he sort of taught me you have requirements to build a soapbox derby, and they come with plans. I think they came with wheels. And you have to basically build it yourself, and there's specifications. So he taught me how to work with wood. He taught me how to work with fiberglass. He taught me how to set up a car to where it'd go down a hill fast, and, you know, drafting and all that kind of stuff. And so I went into that phase. And then next thing you know, the same thing happened with a motorcycle. My friends had motorcycles. I lived sort of in the desert at this time. I moved from Southern California to Nevada,
okay,
to a town called Boulder City. And every kid has a dirt bike, or, you know, they're running around on dirt bikes through the desert. So I want a dirt bike. He found some old 19, I forget what it was, but it was about an 80cc Yamaha, and came in just junk, and he gave it to me, so I fixed it all up. This time, my brother is starting to do the same, and we're both riding around all happy and everything, and he taught me a lot. And I mean, every time, so we're doing the motorcycles, next thing you know, I sort of got through high school, and then I ended up getting into cars, and I was all over the place. I mean, I was building, and then I wanted to get into business because I needed to make money. So I started to lay block and brick and building in the construction industry.
Yeah, you did some construction for a while, too, which was a whole other set of skills.
Yeah. I think I did so many different, you know, construction edges of it. I owned a paint shop at like 19 years old.
Wow.
Like, I was painting cars. Actually, I shouldn't say I owned a paint shop. I was painting out of a storage building for all my friends, and they would pay me.
Okay, fair enough. Hey, that's being entrepreneurial. I get it, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, how I grew up and all the stuff that I've dealt with, it sort of put itself all together when I started the Coke machine thing, or the business, Rick's Restorations, in 1983, and it all sort of, when the fad in overseas, this fad was taken off where they were buying Coke stuff, they were buying Levi's, and I just sort of fell into that groove and found my own niche to where America was throwing away Coke machines, and I figured one day I restored something. I needed the money, and I, I started restoring them, and it started, and it just took off. I mean, people were buying those Coke machines as fast as I could finish them.
Now, here's something that's different. Obviously, back in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, there are point of references where you can, you know, go on eBay and find an instruction manual. You can maybe look for parts on the internet. We got to talk about this is a completely different time in American history.
Yeah.
Not as easy.
No internet.
Yeah.
Back in that time, there was no such thing to me. I mean, I think Apple, I don't even know when Apple came out, but there was nothing out
right
there. You had to, in order to buy the stuff that we did, you had to go door to door. Or classified ads in the newspaper. I mean, the internet nowadays is a great tool, but back then it was an enemy. You know, like in the beginning, we just would run door to door and we'd run all over the country and sell our wares at trade shows and motorcycle shows, and we'd run around and sell our stuff that was restored. And then on the way back, we would pick. We would go to little town. I'd go into little bars or little mom and pop diners. I'd start talking to people. I would talk to them like I was from that area. I sort of chameleoned.
So, I gotcha. Yep. So you'd kind of.
I mean, to come in as a kid from Vegas or L.A. or something wasn't the way to go back then. When you would go into some quaint little town, they just didn't want to talk to you. So you sort of had to figure that out when you talked to them. And then all of a sudden they'd be talking, and next thing you know, they'd say, "Oh yeah, I know where this one thing is," and off we go to that guy, and then sort of go to another guy, and that's how we bought unrestored stuff. And then we'd bring it all back to Vegas, restore it, and then take it all back all over the road. But there was no internet, you know, so it was like. And the other thing is there was a lot of stuff out there to be restored.
Sure.
And nowadays it's sort of got into that disposable, society where you buy something and a year later you get a new one.
But we're talking also about an era in some of these things. I mean, there was a lot of American pride that went in what was being built. So it was built to last, a lot of this stuff. So, I mean, that's very different from what it is today. And some of the trial by error stuff that you did, you just figured it out. See, that's the thing, you know, I always tell my kids about, using MapQuest or Google Maps when they're trying to get someplace. You know, it's kind of a cop out. I remember sitting down looking at a map and figuring your way through it. And that's kind of really what you did in the 80s is you just sat down and tore it apart and figured it out.
Yeah, you didn't. Exactly. You just sort of had to use common sense. And for the longest time, I would just say nobody just has any common sense. It's like just sort of figure stuff out.
Yeah.
You go. And I guess through the years, you know, each thing I tore apart, I just figured out. You know, just like you just said, that's just exactly how you had to do it. You didn't, there was no book. There was no such thing, you know?
Right.
And you just sort of had to, whatever you tore down, you had to be able to put back together. And if there was any parts left on the table, you know you messed it up.
No, that's absolutely right. And, you know, there was one thing you talked about, too, is, you know, when you went door to door, you weren't just talking about going door to door in Nevada. You would get down. You said you would adapt yourself and kind of be a chameleon in some of these places. You're talking about going to Arizona, Texas. I mean, you were traveling
Florida,
the country
New York,
doing this.
I went all over the country.
Yeah.
All over the country. Yeah. Deep into Texas. I went into places in Mississippi I shouldn't have been. I mean, because I did it for probably picking for probably 20 years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because the internet wasn't out yet, you had to buy in order to sell or in order to restore and sell.
Sure. Absolutely.
My thing wasn't there was guys out there. I mean, Mike Wolf of the Pickers and stuff. I knew him back then. Those guys would pick something and they'd basically sell it to guys like me, or they would sell to antique shops. My big goal was I knew what I restored that what sold. I knew how I could make a dollar.
Right.
That's how it sort of, you know, just took off.
And then you got into gas pumps too, which they're rarer and you get a lot more money for those. How did you get into the whole gas pump thing? How'd you know that that was going to be a big selling item?
One day, it was just one of those, I don't know. One day we're at a big, huge outdoor swap meet in Pate, Texas, and we're there looking for Coke machines, and these gas pumps were popping up, and I didn't know them as well. I didn't know that was a model, whatever. I didn't know that that came from a certain company that I, you know, that's a good model or that's a bad model. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any of that stuff. I just thought they were cool to look at. And as a kid, I grew up in my early years of being a teenager was in Boulder City, and I was a gas station attendant. So I sort of related to these old gas pumps and thought, man, in the 70s, all of a sudden, they got these newer style gas pumps. I'm like, lived through the era of all of a sudden having to get evens and odds and get your gas at a gas station. I'd be pumping gas for people. But in my first gas station I worked at, it had these old 50s gas pumps. And I just thought, how cool would that be to you know, buy one of those, and then we'll restore that. And maybe that will go along with the guy that's – a lot of people, where they're buying stuff, they were building little game rooms.
Right.
They were, you know, they had nostalgia places.
Man caves, that type of stuff. Yep, yep.
Yeah. So that's how he sort of got into gas pumps. And each little thing triggered another. Like, all of a sudden I saw a cigarette machine out of the 40s. Just, I love the Art Deco look of it. I could see it painted. I thought, man, this would just be so cool. And for these guys to be just throwing this away, I need to grab these, paint a couple up, and see if I can sell them. And they did. They sold.
You know, you say Art Deco. I just think some of these things, and we were talking before we got on the air, you know, I've got a jukebox, I've got a cigarette machine that has candy cigarettes in it, so it's working and so forth. I consider some of these machines and so forth, really, they're art to me. I mean, what people would hang on the wall, this is art, and especially what I've seen you restore. I mean, it is absolutely, absolutely gorgeous stuff.
Thank you. I don't know if, to me, if I'm in the era, I mean, I know a lot of older guys. I know a lot of younger guys. I think it's like eye candy.
It is, yeah.
You look at something that's from the past and it's still in its beautiful form of how it used to look, it really, to a man, it attracts you.
It does.
It really does. I mean, if I'm looking at going to a car show or something and you've got these, you know, old hot rods and all of a sudden you see one that's just beautifully done, it's just like eye candy. It just draws you to it. So this it is art. It is art. And that's how I looked at it in the very beginning. Is it's an art piece to where I'm painting up something pretty cool, and then I'm putting it out there for sale because nobody knew what they were. I mean, they remembered them, but they didn't have any desire for them or anything. And it just sort of, the more I was pushing them, all of a sudden it hit, and then the show came out, and boom. Between the pickers and a couple of those, shows that they do the antiques on, the stuff just took off, and that pleases me.
Absolutely.
Because it's bringing the past back. Because I'm really sort of this advocate of throwing stuff away that was built to last, says on the back of it, made in the United States of America, doesn't say USA, doesn't say anything else on it. It was just proudly built, and you can see it there that it's all still intact, still functions, you know, more or less. And it was just, God, there was so much heart and soul put into those projects.
Absolutely.
And time, you know, it was amazing.
So, Rick, tell me how the show started. I know it was kind of a spinoff of Pawn Stars. Tell me how that all kind of came through.
So, Rick Harrison at the pawn shop came in and he actually contacted us and asked if we could, I think he wanted to restore a piece.
Okay.
Right, the gas pump or the Coke machine. Mm-hmm. He wanted to restore something, and he said he got a TV show. I knew of his shop in town. I mean, we weren't really close or anything, but he said he wanted to get something restored. So we went on Rick's episode one time, did one piece. It was very new to me. It was weird. It was I'm not really, I should say before that, I really wasn't the kind of guy that could stand in front of a camera or a microphone because I'd had people come up to me before trying to do something, and I just freak out. Started the first one, did it with Rick, and then we popped a few episodes out. And then the production company and History Channel came to us and said, hey, I mean, we like what you do, and you're good on TV, so would you mind doing a show? So, you know, next thing you know, we started this show.
And the rest is history. And what I love about it, it's a History Channel. So, I mean, at least, they appreciate the fact that what you're doing is you're restoring and bringing back to life not only people's memories, but American history. And that's what I find cool about it.
Yeah, it sort of goes with the network. When we started doing the machines for Rick Harrison, it was sort of funny because I'll tell you the story right before that.
Yeah.
So I start getting burnt out about a year before the TV show shows up. Everything, the economy's going down. Everything's going down. I barely got two nickels to put together. I've got a lot of unrestored machines and about two restored machines. I'm single at the time. The next thing you know, I'm just losing all interest in what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I met this girl named Kelly, and come to find out now she's my wife. But I was in this hiatus to where I just wasn't into work, and then she sort of put her foot up my tail and said, you know, get back to work. You know, you're good at what you're doing. I'll help you in the business end so that, you know, I'll get more jobs for you. I'll get more business for you. And both of us together sort of jumped back in the business on sort of a recreation right before this show aired. And next thing you know, in came the Pawn Stars, and it just took off. So, you know, the other thing that happened is we drug our kids in that same exact day. I mean, Brettley, I tried to drag Tyler back in. Brettley started doing all the sandblasting. We have a daughter named Allie that does the all exactly the same thing Kelly does. She runs the whole gift shop. Mm-hmm. She runs the whole crew up front. So anyway,
I've got my mug.
Yeah, there you go. So Kelly's sort of my little angel that helped me out of the slump that I was in, because I mean it, I was down for a year. I just had no interest in stuff. So between Kelly and the show starting, now it took off again. And one thing that also happened was the years before that I was building stuff, I was running around the country buying, building and selling, I would sell to people that would basically be in an art gallery. Hey, looks great. Thank you very much. Here's your check. Boom, done. No satisfaction to me. It was like when you build something like that, just looking for a little bit more.
Absolutely.
So when the show came out, it changed me, because I started getting people to come in with something from their grandparents that meant everything in the world to them, and it was so distraught and so, you know, for lack of a better word, dead. And then when we get it and we tell them what it's going to cost and we do it, and part of the price sometimes doesn't even matter. It's like they want me to revive it. So we do this restoration. We get it all done. When they come in, I mean the tears of joy, the look on their face, the happiness, the hugs. It started to bring me all around to where I mean the passion is back.
Well, there's two things I notice with you though, Rick, is that you know you do throw a price out there, and people I don't think have a clue on the time, the effort, the detail that goes into it. And sometimes they look a little surprised, right? Sometimes money is no object. But, you know, I can see the look on your face. Like, you know right off the top of your head, I know how much time this is going to spend for me to do this. This is what's going to cost. And it is what it is. And then there's on the other hand where they're just like, yeah, just get it done. But I love looking at the buildup at the end of the show when you are ready to unveil that. I not only see the joy on the customers' faces, but I see the joy on your face.
Yeah, it's their face is what makes me feel like that. I'm always looking for the reaction. That's sort of in the very beginning of the very first shows, we would do that unveiling. Then they stopped doing that for a while. My thing is to have somebody walk up to see what we did to their piece. I don't want to just show them from a distance, because I'm going to miss it. I want to be turned around. I want to miss their expression.
Yeah.
So I want to like unveil it, and then there you get to look at it, and I'm looking right at their face. I'm looking right at them. And the reaction that I get, I mean, believe it or not, knock on wood, 100% of the time, it's exactly, you know,
what you were hoping
exactly
for.
What I was hoping.
Yeah, right, right.
And I feel it. It's great. I've made Marines cry. I mean, I just love what I do now. A lot.
Well, now, one of the things is really cool, too, is, and I'm sure this has expanded the types of things that you work on, because, again, you know, I'm a small business guy, so when I have a new opportunity, I get excited, and then when I see maybe what needs to be done, it's kind of like, holy cow, how am I going to get there? I see that sometimes in your faces where you're excited, and then you're like, you're ready, your mind's already going. Like, okay, how am I going to get there?
You know, like the rocket flight we did. Kelly tells me that somebody's coming in, a customer's coming in with a truckload of stuff. And when we pull it out, I was freaking. And you're right. I freak out a lot. I'm looking. I'm freaking. I'm going, oh, my God. My head can't compute it. I'm trying to compute it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, what the cool thing about the show also is that I get to do different pieces. You know, because you're on a TV show, you can't do a Coke machine every day. It wouldn't be very entertaining.
Right.
So I get to get these new, different pieces. And there's when people do see the show and they see something cool that we redid, they bring in something even wilder, like that jetpack that came in that was, oh my God.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
That one, I saw that. I was like, but I've never seen one. I've been to a museum. I've never seen anything like that. And I sit there on my
parents' floor watching them go to the moon. It was like, it was the most incredible feeling in the world.
Well, stick around. We'll have more with Rick Dale of Rick's Restoration after the news next on 720 WGN. Dave Player on 720 WGN, and we're talking to Rick Dale of Rick's Restorations and the original host of American Restoration on the History Channel. Now, you know, every week as we were talking about, you got so many different pieces that you work on. Do you prefer to restore things to what, you know, it was the exact condition and the exact look, or do you like the adventure of designing something new with something old? Like, what do you like doing?
I was telling Kelly this, and she said, no, you can't say that. But quite honestly, I like... because I've done so much stuff original, sometimes I like the thrill of morphing something.
Yeah,
of
right.
Making something that was like I'll just give you an example of Sammy Hagar's refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
So
Sammy Hagar. Refrigerator, yeah.
I've taught a lot of the guys, everybody around here, how to build stuff and how to do stuff. But when it comes to creativity and everything, it's all hands on deck. Everybody's in it. And the thrill of, like, six of my best guys side by side building, thinking, whiteboarding, doing something crazy, going over the top, giving him something, you know, just giving him something to just blow him away. It's just that's fun. That is just
sure.
Fun for me because, you know, it's like sort of, different sometime, you know. You need a little variety every once in a while.
Well, you did something with the Dodgers dogs. You took something and did it with that. I think there was, is this a show that's coming up? I'm trying to think if I saw it or if I just read about it, but about a cigarette machine that you had to convert to sell tools or something like that. I mean, that's an adventure, and that's got to keep you motivated to keep going, because you're right. You can't work on the same things all the time.
Right. That was last week. That was last week.
Oh, yeah, it was last week.
That was one of those episodes that I messed up, because I literally, Kelly and I, put it in the truck. We're going down to this bike vending show, and we're going to show it to him. Well, I told him, we're sort of in a hurry. I'd get a couple pieces in the truck and go down. Forgot the gosh darn key to the one cigarette machine, and I'm assuming in my head what's inside there. I don't know. I know them, but I know a lot of candy. Cigarettes, I bought all these cigarette machines.
Yeah.
And I just haven't been in every one of them. Come to find out, the mechanism's totally, totally wrong. So then I had to go out and actually buy another unit just to get the mechanism out. And then to make it, you know, accommodate those. A lot of stuff in the show you don't...
Sure. Oh, it seems very smooth, Rick. The way it goes, yeah.
I'll go back to when you were talking about how, you know, when I throw a price out there. And you just figure that average project takes us 100 hours to film. 100 hours to film.
Wow.
So that you got the filming, and then you got all the other projects in the shop. So sometimes it takes me like 3 weeks to do something. And there's a lot of hours that go in that thing. And, yeah, I do know. I know when I look at something, I know how much chrome's going in. I know how much paint, I know how much body work. I know what I got to do to make it work.
Well, you know what your overhead is, and you know what your margin has to be. I mean, that's just part of business.
There's another big one. That's what Kelly reminds me. Kelly's the boss when it comes to overhead and margin. She reminds me, and that's what keeps us in business, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I'm a small business guy, too. I got to keep all that in mind, too, and I got to remember I'm paying for heat, I'm paying for health insurance, I'm paying for everything, you know?
Yeah. Very important.
Now, we've been, you know, I've been watching the show since the beginning. I got to tell you, one of my favorite episodes was from a few years ago. It was an episode called The Pick, the Pawn, and the Polish, where the main players of really all my favorite shows on the History Channel, American Pickers, Pawn Stars, American Restoration, were all in the same show. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was a great idea by History Channel. I mean, they brought all three of us together. I mean, we all knew each other. Actually, I shouldn't say that. I did not meet... Mike Wolf. I knew who he was in picking, but I never met him, and I saw him out there. When I met Mike Wolf with the Pickers, him and I just sort of clicked.
I bet.
And then what was fun part about it is sort of when we were clicking, then when Rick and I were side by side and trying to contradict the pricing on it, then it got really fun.
I bet it did.
Bashing and we're saying things that shouldn't happen. But that was a good episode because... And then we actually brought in Danny with Counting Cars also in that
episode. That's right.
Because I couldn't, I was so busy, I said, I can't do a car in the amount of time you need me to do it. So they said, why don't we bring it to Danny? And next thing you know, down Danny's got his show because of that, too. So it was a real good show that sort of brought all the things together for history, and it showed a lot of history, too.
Well,
different ways to deal with stuff.
Well, that, and then all four of you guys need to make money on top of it all. So,
yeah.
You know, each one wants to.
We're trying to be business.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and the series has featured so many appearances too, which is kind of cool. Like you'll always have someone random on. You've had Lance Burton on. You've had Sammy Hagar, as you mentioned. You've had Billy Joel. Was it Billy Joel? Was it a bike? Was it a motorcycle?
Yeah, it was a BSA motorcycle.
That's pretty damn cool.
He's cool. Yeah. As a kid, I watched him, and he's an icon and a huge entertainer. And he walked up to me, and I swear to God, he was just like the normalest guy I'd ever met in my life.
That's neat. It's nice to know that some of these guys, though, that, you know, you've enjoyed, you know, entertaining and so forth, are big fans of yours. Isn't that kind of surreal?
Yes, that's very, very surreal.
Yeah.
I heard a little somebody say that on radio or something, and the next thing it started happening to me, and it was like, yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. It's crazy. Well, you know, and here's one thing you do. You work with family. I don't know if I could work with my wife and my family. Really. And sometimes those are the only people you can really trust. And you probably push them the hardest because you expect the most out of them. But again, you were mentioning earlier, Kelly, your wife, and she's kind of the one that really helps run the place. You got your brother, Ron. You got your son, Tyler. You got Kelly's son, Brettley. You got Kelly's daughter, Allie. You got Kelly's niece, Michelle, working there. I mean, it's really a family business for you.
Yeah, and in the beginning when Kelly and I got together, I didn't even think I'd never had a family business ever. I think my brother and I worked together a long, long time ago, and I was really, really afraid of it because, you know, everybody has opinions, there's arguing and issues and all that stuff. But I'll tell you, to this day, I would never have it any other way.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, all got my back, I got their backs. We help each other. We may have discussions. But at the end of the day, we all love each other. And it is like the greatest. I trust them. It's incredible.
Yeah, and you know, and what's cool is that when you're working on something together, it really probably bonds you together because you're all learning something new as a team together.
Yeah. I mean, Allie's got an old car. Brettley has an old car. Tyler has an old car. Everybody, it does bond you.
Funny you say that.
It really does.
Funny you say that because I mentioned this to you during the break that when I was out in Vegas, it was a few years ago when I came out and see you. You just moved closer to the Strip, and I noticed all the old pickups and all the old cars outside, and that really told me, boy, you're really – everybody's really into this.
Yeah, they did, and they got the vibe, and that makes me proud because, I mean, what's really made me proud is that each one of these kids, I mean, Kelly and I can leave now, and Allie will run the merch area.
Yeah.
Tyler will run the back of the shop, and Brettley will pick, and Ron will pick, and the whole business will run without us, and that means that Kelly and I have done our job. I mean, it's impressive for that short of a period of time for all these kids to, they're so smart. And so willing to work. I mean, that's amazing. Nowadays, kids, you know, I've tried to hire kids. It's hard.
Yeah, I know. I bet it is. Well, what was cool is when I came in there and I said hello to you and you brought out Cowboy and your son and everybody said hello. You know, I just knew you were a true business guy because you said hello to everybody and then you said, all right, everybody get back to work. We've got stuff to do. There's no nice to see you. Thanks for stopping by.
Yeah.
But that's exactly how it is. So, what's a dream project for you? What's something you've always wanted to do or work on that you would just love to have the opportunity to do?
Okay, my dream is basically, it's gonna sound weird, but my dream is to restore a 1930s, 1940s town that has been suppressed and lost and left behind. Because I used to do construction, I do all this kind of stuff here. I'd like to elevate myself to come in and literally restore the whole town to where it could bring itself back to life again. And with everything that's in it, because I think the old stuff and the town, everything about it, people, it would become an attraction to where as it sits now, it may be decrepit and no money and nobody's coming. that's what I'd like to do.
That's very cool. What a great that's a great vision to have, actually, to do something like that. I mean, it would be such a great piece of Americana. Now, you've got some really great pieces that are for sale that you can find as we speak on your website, ricksrestorations.com. Tell me kind of what you got on the site right now that you could actually go online and purchase.
Well, there's a lot of Coke machines, a lot of gas pumps. There's mainly the thing that we do the most. Bandy machines, you know, there's some slot machines, there's some jukeboxes, barber's chairs. That's the kind of stuff that you can get because we have enough time to finish. Sometimes customers come in with a project and they, you know, maybe have two. So sometimes with these pieces that you see on television, sometimes we end up with two of them. They'll sit in the showroom for a day or so. We've got a lot of safes, old safes. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff. Kelly's marbled it up with a lot of, you know, 50s pictures and some of the old porcelain plates. And I'd say there's something for everyone.
There is.
You know, any kind of price range, to be quite honest. She really does a good job in the merchandise area and in the showroom.
I've seen that. And the pictures are great, too. So, I mean, you really can see what you're getting. But the work you do is just fabulous. Now, what if you have something that you want restored or want to get an estimate? So, I mean, there's two ways you can do it. I know there's one, if you want to be on the show, you can do certain things. But what if you just want to come to you and say, hey, look, I've got this thing. I got to get it out to you. How do you go through that process?
Yeah, the best thing to do is go to ricksrestorations.com. And is that all I got? What's that? Yeah, so you go to ricksrestorations.com.
Yep.
And there's an area where Allie has a little an area there to where you just basically you're sending some pictures and about what you want to do. And she just takes it from there. She can take, you know, she'll either give it to me or Kelly, or she'll estimate it herself. And then she gets back to them. And then next thing you know, the process goes to where they ship it out or they bring it out or whatever, and then we go ahead and start.
And I assume you have to build into the fact that you really can't see the mechanics sometimes of things, how things work. So you have to assume you're going to have to do some work in doing that as well, right?
That is something that we have learned, yes.
Yeah, exactly.
That is something that is like pictures are very deceiving.
Yeah, right.
You always tell somebody, you know, we give them an estimate. As soon as it gets here, we can give them a little closer estimate, and then it usually works out pretty well that way.
Cool. Well, and if you're a big fan of the show, there's some cool American Restoration gear available as well. I mean, you could pretty much buy that jean shirt cutoff that you wear on the show. You've got mugs. I mean, I like it. I mean, I drink out of my American Restoration mug every day, so there's a lot of fun stuff as well. So cool stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, they're located, if you're ever in Vegas, they're at 1112 South. It's 1112 South Commerce Street in Las Vegas. Again, ricksrestorations.com is the place to go, or you can call 702-366-7030. And folks, this isn't a social line. This is for work. If you got something you want to get done, this is who you call to get things started. And to find, again, some really, really cool things that Rick and his team and his family have amazingly restored, just a slice of America, you can go to ricksrestorations.com. Rick Dale, man, thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight.
No, thank you, Dave. And anybody out there that wants to come in and get a free tour, come through the shop and see all of us working and get to smile and wave, come on in.
That's awesome, Rick. I appreciate that. People are going to Vegas all the time, so that's a nice offer. Thanks again, Rick.
You bet.
All right, much more ahead on 720 WGN.